talk about movies, maybe a joke or two. It's pod on the cob. It's pod on the cob.
Hey there, welcome to Pod on the Cob, the podcast about movies and corn, and even more specifically, movies that happen to feature corn in them in some way, shape, or form. My name is Stephanie, and I am sitting here in a room with my co-host, Tyler. Tyler, say hi.
Hi, we're in a room.
If this is your first time tuning into the show, welcome. Yay. Thanks for joining us. We're so happy to have you. If you are a long-time listener, welcome back. Thanks for listening. We love you. You're awesome. If you want to rate us or follow us on social media, we would be stoked. Otherwise, just stick around. We're happy to have you no matter what. Tyler, what's good?
Earlier today, I was feeling a little listless, and I tapped my heels together, and I said, "There's no place like home." And I just materialized in this beautiful studio space that you have set up for us. And you know, funny enough, Steph, that actually segues us into the movie that we're reviewing this week. Can you believe it?
Wow. Talent. That's talent right there. And you know, I have something to add. I consider, you know, like myself a lot like the Olive Garden, in that when you're here, your family... I couldn't say that without laughing. When you're here... your family.
And we'd also like to thank our sponsor, Olive Garden, for sponsoring this episode. this week we are recording what I will argue is the biggest movie we will ever cover. I don't think we'll ever cover a movie more popular than this one, and there's some stats to back that up at the end of the episode I have for us.
Absolutely.
But we are covering 1939's The Wizard of Oz. Obviously, it's a classic, directed by Victor Fleming, starring Judy Garland, Frank Morgan, Ray Bolger, Burt Lauer, Jack Haley, and Margaret Hamilton. It's actually based off of Frank L. Baum's book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. This is the whole Oz franchise. But the most important detail I want to add around what we're reviewing today is it is Steph's birthday month. So we are reviewing The Wizard of Oz because it's the one that Steph wanted to review for her birthday.
Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you. Around the time this episode comes out, it'll be just near your birthday.
And you know, it's funny because I was actually born somewhere over the rainbow.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So that was a part of why I wanted to pick this movie.
I was born in Munchkinland.
That tracks, actually.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So obviously, part of how our podcast works is we like to go over the entire story of the movie, but we always like to do a little quick synopsis first, which you have become an expert in.
Wow.
These 1 minute elevator pitches you do of what we're recording are getting very good. So I'm very excited to hear.
I swear it's not AI. It's me.
Oh, I can tell.
Okay.
I can tell. No. And also, our voices, we are also people. We're not AI.
Well, that's TBD.
Steph, what is the synopsis of The Wizard of Oz?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Dissatisfied with her rural life and longing for something better, young Dorothy and her dog Toto run away from home. After second-guessing her decision and returning home filled with regret, a tornado rips through their farm. Dorothy and Toto are whisked away on an adventure to the magical land of Oz, finally discovering what lies over the rainbow, only to find out that there's no place like home. It gets a slow clap.
They get better and better every time. They get better. And I always love to send people back to episode one of Bob the Cobb when we didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
Yeah.
And our synopsis of Children of the Corn ended up being the entire...
was just like the first minute of the movie.
The whole movie. But we've learned so much.
We live and we learn. That's why I have the sign, you know, right when you walk in the door that says,
I did see that.
Live, laugh, love.
I did see that.
Because that's just my motto.
Thank you for putting that up.
Yeah. I did it just for you.
I forgot to... I remembered to live in love, but I had forgotten to laugh.
Aw.
Yeah. So before we go... So for those of you who are new to the podcast, we always tend to go beat by beat kind of through the story. Wizard of Oz is super famous. I'm sure we'll kind of cut some corners here and there. It's also very easy to kind of retell.
Totally.
But before we go into the story walkthrough, I always like to, you know, take a step back and just think a little bit about like what this movie means to us, whether we have a history with it or not. You know, what our relationship was and our feelings were kind of going into this most recent viewing. So I'll let you kick it off. Wizard of Oz, you know, what's your story with the Wizard of Oz? How did you approach it? I'm curious, like, you know, what the history is there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love taking a walk down memory lane, especially with movies, because like if you really love a movie and it impacts you, like you remember where you were, what you did, how you felt. So it's especially fun to like recall those memories, I think. The Wizard of Oz, I grew up watching all the time. My mom is like a huge fan. And just like growing up in a household that loves like musicals and music and all that kind of stuff, The Wizard of Oz, I think like transcended so many things, like across all kinds of, you know, barriers, I suppose. The music's great, the acting's fun, it's fun for kids, fun for grown-ups. I've always known The Wizard of Oz, even like references that I didn't even know that I knew in like the back of my mind, but I didn't even realize they were from The Wizard of Oz. Upon rewatching, I was like, oh yeah, kind of laughing that, yeah, that's where I know it from. What about you?
I'm in the same boat. And like, typically you and I like to hide our feelings about a movie until the end of the podcast. Cause we don't really want people to like, if you know how we feel, it might already ruin the podcast for you to some degree, because you might be like, I know they don't like this movie I like, so I don't want to listen to the rest. Or I know they like this movie I hate, so I don't want to listen to the rest. And I told you before we started recording that it's going to be very, very hard for me to hide my feelings for The Wizard of Oz, because I went into it knowing I loved it, because it's very nostalgic for me. I grew up with it. It reminds me of some of my grandparents. I used to watch it with them a lot. It reminds me of my own parents. I've seen it countless times. I've always loved it. I never was cynical about it, even as a teenager. And in fact, I would even argue that as a teenager, there was like a resurgence of me loving it, because as a kid, I loved it because it was like magical and kind of weird and off-putting. My favorite things. I love weird off-putting movies, you know, and there's a lot of off-putting stuff in this that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But then as a teenager, I really fell in love with some of the conspiracy theories around it,
oh,
from
hell
like
yeah.
The hanging munchkin, mm-hmm. the asbestos, the
yes.
Witch being lit on fire,
damn.
Frank L. Baum's jacket being found at a thrift store nearby. Do you know that story?
No.
You want to hear a good story?
Yes.
As they were filming, they bought a coat from a local thrift store. They needed to use it for some of the scenes, I think, involving the wizard's character, or maybe like one of his mini characters, because that actor plays like five characters in the movie. And when they bought it, there is a piece of paper inside of one of the pockets of the coat, and they found the piece of paper certified that the jacket had belonged to Frank L. Baum, the writer of The Wizard of Oz.
What?
Isn't that bizarre? That's a
Dang.
Real story. So there's all these great like urban legends around it. Some are true, some are not. And
I do remember that in high school, like that being a huge, super fun sort of like talking point.
It gives you like a renewed interest in it, I think. So as a teenager, when I was at my most cynical and I wasn't liking things I liked as a kid, I still loved it, you know? So yeah, I have really nothing but positive things to say about it. And I think I'm going to make fun of some things as we do our
Absolutely.
Review, but I mostly just love this movie. I will say, I always like to try to recommend other podcasts or YouTube videos you can watch on something. You know, I just went over some of the conspiracies and some of the controversies around the making of this. And there's a podcast called The Weekly Planet. And they do a much better overview of some of these controversies than I think you and I will probably cover today. So just want to tell like our listeners, I'm a big fan of the Weekly Planet. They were some of the guys who inspired me into getting into podcasting. And yeah, check it out. Like they do a thing called Caravan of Garbage, and I think they cover Wizard of Oz in the Caravan of Garbage.
Okay,
but they do a great review. Yeah, it's really, really good stuff.
So the movie opens. And, well, it starts with a dedication, which I thought was kind of cool. Did you make any notes on that dedication?
I didn't take any notes on it, but I watched it with Casey Anna last night, my partner. I'm sure you watched it with your partner,
absolutely,
Chris.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we both just had a little moment.
Same. Nice. I made a note because the, like, it was kind of a beautiful, some beautiful words on the screen. And at the end, it's like, this movie's dedicated to the young at heart, which I thought was kind of cute and fun. Kind of captures like the good vibes that you're about to receive by watching this movie.
Even though I think this movie is absolutely full of bad vibes.
Dude. Okay. Yeah, but we'll get to that. So anyways, after that, it opens to Dorothy, main character played by Judy Garland, running with her super cute little dog Toto, which I have to say reminds me of your parents' dog, mm-hmm. Lulu.
It's like a combination of both my parents' dogs.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's so cute. I couldn't help but just think of Lulu. Anyways.
Yeah, shout out to Lulu.
Yeah, shout out. We love you, Lulu. Thanks for listening. So Dorothy is running with Toto. It's all black and white. She's running on this like rural road and she's kind of in a frenzy and she's like, come on, Toto, let's go, let's go. We gotta go find Auntie Em and Uncle Henry. The neighbor is basically like after them, right?
Right. Yeah. It's one of the notes I took is that this movie, it really perfectly sets everything up really quickly through scattered dialogue that she delivers to multiple characters. First her aunt and uncle, and then the farmhands who work on the property. We learn everything we need to know.
Yeah.
We learn about her character, who she is. She's kind of listless. She sort of wants, no one's really paying attention to her. We learn about the conflict of the initial conflict of the movie, which is that Toto's in danger because of a bad, something that happened with their neighbor. We learn the character traits of every single character. And it's all like in 10, 15 minutes, we learn. I told Casey at one point that a modern day remake of The Wizard of Oz would be like 45 miserable minutes at the start of like, I'm an alcoholic. I wish I had a heart, but I'm an alcoholic. And, I like Dorothy's like emo and like it would be just the movie quickly and effectively tells you everything you need to know. To kind of set up the story. It's perfect.
Sets it up. It like gives you some foreshadowing, which is super fun.
Yeah.
Like
great payoffs.
I love that. Dorothy's so charming and so relatable as like a young, she's a young girl and she's living with her aunt and uncle like in the middle of nowhere in Kansas and just kind of wants something more. You know, her best friend's a dog and like it is threatened by this evil neighbor who basically wants to come and like kill Toto.
Her actual words are, she wants to destroy Toto.
That I wrote that down too. It's
destroy
so
him.
Sad.
So Toto bit her and allegedly. And the implication is that Toto wouldn't have bit someone that wasn't wicked, right? That wasn't, Toto's a good dog. Yes. Toto wouldn't do that unless the
that's
person.
That's what Auntie M tells her basically.
Yeah,
it's like,
which is
Toto
great.
Wouldn't have done that. Like, he's perfectly kind with people who are like normal or whatever. She says something like that that made me laugh.
Dorothy's feelings about the world that she's living in and her feelings of how she's treated by other people. I feel so cheesy for saying this, but for this movie's like 100 years old, but I'm literally getting chills. Like, all of these feelings are encapsulated in our first musical number of the movie, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is. I guess I'm just glazing a song that doesn't need to be glazed because it's already one of the most famous,
totally.
Noteworthy. It's an Oscar-winning song.
Yep.
But it's just fantastic and beautiful, and it makes you emotional. I felt emotional right away. And I just like loved the I was transported immediately into my childhood watching. Judy Garland's voice is incredible. all the performances are really good in this, but she is fantastic.
She's
in this.
Definitely outstanding amongst, yeah. And yeah, her voice is amazing. The whole, like, even the set that she's on and where she stands and how she looks into the light while she sings, like, it is just stunning.
It's funny you mentioned the set, because one of the notes I took was how boring I thought the sepia tone parts of the movie were when I was a kid, and how I always wanted them to be over. I wanted to just get to, like, colorful Ozland, and how as an adult I was just like, the set is so nice.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of matte paintings in this.
Yeah.
And they vary in quality.
Totally.
And to be fair, the movie was made in the 30s.
Yeah.
It wasn't made with high-definition TVs in mind. I understand that we're, like, living in a time where they weren't anticipating it looking how good it was going to look today.
Yeah.
But that said, the matte paintings at the start in the sepia tone kind of parts of the movie at the very beginning, everything is so, like, it all just looks so real to me. And like, I love the sets at the start. I'm moving ahead and I'm not trying to, so we'll get to this eventually, but, like, when they show the tornado later on, spoiler alert, there's a tornado. It looks so good.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
It's such a great effect.
It's so
you
fun.
Know, so I love the, like, I kind of appreciated these scenes a little bit more as an adult, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
totally. So back to Dorothy on her farm, we meet these farmhands. We're kind of introduced to, like I said, just some foreshadowing with who we're gonna meet later on in the story. Her aunt and uncle are super busy. They're running a farm. You know, it's not easy work. The neighbor who we've already mentioned, who Toto allegedly bit and who Toto has been, like, running into her garden, all this stuff. Her name is Miss Gulch. She rides her bike over and she's just demands an audience with, Dorothy's aunt and uncle. Essentially says, I have the sheriff's permission to take Toto from your home and he's gonna go be destroyed. Destroyed. Dorothy begs them not to take Toto. It's very sad.
It's really sad.
Toto is so sweet. We've known him for all of, like, 5 minutes and we love him already. But there's nothing that the aunt and uncle can do. Miss Gulch shoves Toto in her, like, little basket and off she goes, rides her bike away. Dorothy, understandably, is extremely upset, heads back to her room in tears.
You know who else is upset at this point in the movie?
You.
Me. You know why I'm upset?
Because Toto's gone?
Well, yeah. But there's another reason I'm upset.
Okay.
I thought we would have seen corn by now.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, our podcast. I was starting to get a little nervous. I'm like, our podcast is about movies that feature corn, and I pictured there being a ton.
And
of
they're
corn.
Farmers. And we're used to, you know, if you've listened to the other episodes of Pod on the Cob, pretty much all of the main characters, with the exception of our Christmas one, they were farmers who were, like, farming corn, and there's just, like, tons of cornfields, and that's where it's set. And Dorothy and her family live on a farm in Kansas, but there's no crops being grown that you can see.
You can't see any crops.
It's just, like, prairie land, I guess. Or, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, no corn yet. Oh, I'm really sorry.
I was starting to get nervous. Scared. Luckily, we'll get to corn, but I was starting to get a little nervous.
Okay.
Also, we get immediate relief. We get immediate relief.
Thankfully.
Toto literally escapes from Miss Gulch right away.
Yeah.
It's the next thing that happens. Not only does Toto escape right away, but Toto also gets to Dorothy, like, right away.
Pretty
and
much
and
instantly.
It's nice. We do get a second to really feel her, like, sadness. She's fantastic. We already said that. The emotion she displays is so great. But he does get back to her pretty much right away. And she decides she needs to run away.
Yeah.
If she doesn't run away, this is going to repeat anyways, you know, so she runs away.
She runs away and she's, like, on her journey. She's just walking on this dirt road. She runs into I don't know if it's broken down or just on the side of the road, this, like, caravan. And there's a man in it, Professor Marvel, and he sees her and he's like, you know, what's wrong? Oh, and he kind of looks at her suitcase and sees that she's young. And he's like, oh, like, let me guess, like, you ran away from home. She's like, how did you know this and that? And he's like, oh, you know, I'm a fortune teller. Come into my caravan and let me look into my crystal and, like, tell you your future or something, which watching this last night with my husband, with Chris, he's like, okay, if this were any other movie, I would be freaking out right now about what this man's intentions are. But I know that this is like somewhat of a harmless film, so I'm not going to get too alarmed. But yeah, he's totally like, to this young teenage girl, come on into my caravan and
it's a little creepy
and see what we got. And he's a total hack. You can tell right away, you know, they don't sugarcoat it. He like looks in her basket and sees a picture of her with her auntie, and like she kind of, you know, you can look at her and kind of assume some general things. And he looks into his crystal and, you know, makes up this whole story about Auntie M and how she's having a heart attack or something. She's sick with grief. She totally misses Dorothy, and Dorothy becomes ridden with guilt. And she's like, I got to go. I got to get home. That's it. I got
to
go.
I need to talk about Professor Marvel. Okay, a second longer.
You do? Okay, go.
Because will it surprise you at all, given our track record on this podcast, that of course I loved the sleazy con man weirdo character?
No, he was great.
I love,
yeah,
look at my track record here. I love Professor Marvel.
Okay.
I love Santa Claus from Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I loved Winter Warlock from Santa Claus. I have a thing.
Did you love Cooper from Interstellar?
No, but he's not sleazy enough for me. I have this weird affinity when it comes to like sleazy con men who are kind of boozy and drunk, and they are in a appropriate with children, but like accidentally inappropriate with children, not like purposefully. And he's great. Like, and also sets up a great foreshadowing later on about like, you know, you can't just trust adults. They don't always know what they say they know. There's some great like lessons to be learned. Dorothy doesn't learn hardly anything actually over the course of the movie, but she could learn a lesson about adults don't always know the things they say they know.
Yeah.
But she does run home, and it's nice. Casey and I were calling this sweet sleaze. He's being sleazy. He's conning her, but he's conning her into making the right decision.
Totally.
Go back home.
He's a total hack. He's not actually seeing Auntie M. He's not doing any of that stuff that he's leading her to believe, but he didn't like take her money.
No. He's nice. Yeah. Also, I just need to add here, and I'm going to say this multiple times this podcast, as a kid, this all went way over my head. I thought he was for real. I didn't understand that he was conning her into going back home. I thought he was like a fortune teller reading her fortune, and I thought Annie M was sick. Like, I was like, I did not get any of this when I was a kid.
Oh, same.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie I did not get as a kid.
Totally. Which, but it, you know, that's kind of fun that it works, that you can still sort of get meaning out of it as a kid, and but then come back as an adult and watch it and feel like you're getting something different.
Totally. So she runs home, but as she runs home, a tornado has kicked up. I mentioned
those
earlier, but
I'll
mention it. I already mentioned this, but I'll say it again. The tornado effect is actually really kind of awesome. The tornado in the background. I'm truly curious as to how they did that.
Yeah, it did look really good, huh?
It's really good. It aged. It's probably the effect that's aged the best.
And I loved like the wind. So Auntie M is running out. It's kind of flashing back between Dorothy running back home down like her long rural lane, and Auntie M and all the farmhands back at the farm kind of calling for Dorothy. Dorothy, where are you? Dorothy, where are you? Come on. And they're like making their way to the storm cellar, and they're, you know, they're like fighting to walk down their porch, and they're fighting the door to the cellar to get it closed. So you're kind of getting this impression of how truly windy it is. And like Dorothy comes up and she's calling, you know, into the wind, and her voice is totally muted. Like sound doesn't go anywhere. She goes to open her front door and her like screen door just blows off, which I thought was really cool. Like it was a fun, I don't know. It was like fun to watch. It was a fun way to play. The practical effects were really good, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's genuinely harrowing. Yeah. It culminates in her getting knocked out by the window blows out, which is like another great, like all, I agree. The practical effects are awesome. And then of course it does lead to the worst effect in the entire movie, which is like her looking out the window as she's in the tornado and there's like things flying by.
But I love that.
Me too.
I loved it as a kid, but like, it's so fun cause she's totally sitting there just like looking out this window, and it's just like someone riding by on a bike or like, I don't know. Whatever.
Two guys in a rowboat and they wave to her.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And then there's a genuinely, to me, like as a kid, one of the scariest things in the movie, which is Miss Gulch riding by on her bike. And then she turns into like a witch on a broomstick. And it's genuinely like, kind of scary, you know, like, 'cause at this point in the movie, nothing fantastical has really happened yet. So her being a witch all of a sudden is totally out of nowhere. Like, I mean, obviously we've seen it before. It's a famous movie, but like, imagine seeing it for the first time and the antagonist of the movie turns into this, like, you know, kind of classic movie monster.
Yep. Cackling away on her broom with like a big flowing black coat and that pointy hat. Yeah, it's totally rad.
And this all culminates in not only to me, I guess, you know, I don't want to speak for you. This all culminates in not only the best scene in Wizard of Oz, but I really think arguably maybe one of the greatest scenes in film history. I mean, I really like she all the sound, it's a really noisy scene. All the sound dies down. It's quiet. She works her way slowly through the house, gets to the front door, opens the front door, and it's just Technicolor. This amazing, and I'm describing a scene that everyone listening to this podcast has seen. I know that I'm not describing some novel indie movie, but watch it again. If you haven't watched Wizard of Oz in the last decade, watch it again.
For real.
It is... It's breathtaking. It's truly like it is why we watch movies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so beautiful. She walks out and it's, I mean, everything's in color, but not only that, but she's in an extremely colorful land. There's flowers. There's like plants growing 20, 30 feet tall. There's like the pavement or the sidewalk or whatever is yellow and different colors, and the houses, like, it's very fun.
Now, does Oz look like a tiny plastic theme park for children on our modern day televisions? Yeah, kind of.
Maybe, but it, you know, you could also look at it and just really appreciate how cool it. Like, I can put myself there on the set and be like, oh, what a cool set, versus like standing in front of green screen and like, maybe it technically looks good. But like, you know, those things were actually there, with the exception of like whatever was painted on the background or whatever.
But even that was there. Like, yeah. You could see
and
it.
She's walking around the set and it feels so movie magic to me. I think that's what I like. That's what's so charming, is it feels so like... Why you love movies is like because you get that feeling, and that you totally get that in this, I mean, in this movie in general, but in this scene as well.
You'll find with almost everything I make fun of for this, because we have to make fun of things because we're podcasters. You'll find that almost everything I make fun of, I can also completely excuse in this. I make fun of the little tiny sets and the plastic flowers and the
very,
obvious matte
like,
paintings.
Shiny plastic.
Totally. Like, I make fun of all of that in my notes. But I wouldn't change a thing. It's just wonderful. It's also like fucking 100 years old. So I'm going to go ahead and give him a pass on this one.
Well, Tyler, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
I'm making a face, but it doesn't translate well to the podcast. But I made a really excited face when she said it.
Yeah, it was a good face. But you can't see our faces. No. So it's less effective. Not effective. In the distance, a bubble appears.
Yeah, we get our
most... Could you tell it was a bubble right away?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could.
Okay.
The most useless character in The Wizard of Oz.
Dude, oh my god. Okay, I guess I can say bad things, because hot damn, Glinda.
Glinda kind of sucks. And listen, before you're like, actually, in Wicked, Glinda, the lore... Listen, I didn't see Wicked. I've seen the play. I'm not talking about Wicked. We're talking about the 1939.
The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, we're not talking about Wicked. So I don't care if Glinda has like new lore behind her that makes her cool. Glinda's fucking useless in this movie. She shows up and she just says, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say she's like kind of shallow and like kind of bitchy. So Dorothy's house lands on... the Wicked Witch of the East, Dorothy, you know, she didn't know that. And she lands and this bubble appears, and it's this blonde pink dressed witch. And she introduces herself as Glinda, the Witch of the North. And Dorothy says something along the lines of, like, you're a witch, but, like, you're so beautiful. And she goes, well, only bad witches are ugly. I'm like, okay, Glinda, we see you.
Yeah.
Out come the Munchkins.
Yeah, the Munchkins are... So as okay, I don't want to get canceled. I'll choose my words very carefully. I'm not talking about actual little people or like dwarves, but the Munchkins of Munchkinland.
Yeah.
In the Wizard of Oz, always creep me out. As a kid, they always creep me out, and that didn't change on this rewatch. And to be fair, some of them are just children.
Right.
It doesn't really matter who is playing them. They're kind of creepy. They have like plastic hair.
Yes. Dude, and, that's like, in my
costumes.
Notes.
They're creepy.
And out comes their musical number, which, wow, do you think they rehearsed that? Because the rehearsals paid off. Like, that was an epic outcome, like, bands and dancers and, like, the mayor. And they have all of these, like, songs already to celebrate the Wicked Witch is dead.
Mm-hmm.
She's been terrorizing them, I guess. And they're celebrating Dorothy as a hero. She has no idea what she's done. She has no idea where she is. They're celebrating Dorothy that she killed the Wicked Witch. Then we see the ruby slippers.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's more than one. There's more than two witches in Oz.
Right.
Glinda is here and the Wicked Witch of the East is dead. But dear listeners, did you know there's actually a Wicked Witch of the West in the Wizard of Oz? Because she shows up.
She shows up.
In an amazing... I love her entrance and exit.
Yeah,
like the red, same. This is like, you know, billowing red cloud of smoke. And listen, before my film buff nerds come at me and say, did you know that the actress was horribly burned by that smoke? Yes, I'm aware that there are many unethical practices in the making of Wizard of Oz. I already led you to another podcast you can listen to learn more about it, The Weekly Planet. But yes, despite the fact that it horribly injured her.
Oh, and she was so great.
And she's great.
Yeah.
Her entrance and exit is awesome. She shows up and she wants to get the ruby slippers off of her dead sister's feet.
Yes.
Before she can get to them, the most horrible thing that's ever happened in a movie happens. The shriveled foot thing. Does that not stick with you?
It is creepy.
It's so creepy.
And I don't know that I really get it, but I don't know that I, like, need to get it.
I don't think, yeah.
The slippers just appear on Dorothy's feet, but I'm also like, did Glinda do that?
I feel like Glinda
she's
kind of
twisted.
That. Glinda sucks.
And we'll get to that, like, I'll get more, like, at the end of the story, I can, like, bitch a little bit more about Glinda. But, so the ruby slippers appear on Dorothy's feet, and obviously the Wicked Witch of the West is not happy. And should we say, like, should I say that the actor who's playing the Wicked Witch of the West is who was also Miss Gulch back at Kansas.
I think it's okay to say that at this point, like, almost every character that we knew from Kansas, the three farmhands, Miss Gulch, and Professor Marvel all show up as reflections of themselves in Oz.
Yeah.
Which I did not get as a kid, but I get now as an adult.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's never really explained why the ruby slippers matter. All we really know about the ruby slippers is that the Wicked Witch of the West really wants them and that Dorothy has them.
Yep.
That's all we really learn. We also kind of learn that, like, the Wicked Witch, there are, like, limitations on what she can and can't do, so she can't really do anything to Dorothy in Munchkinland. So she, like, leaves, but Glinda basically says, like, well, if you want to get back, you're not safe here. I mean, even though you are, like objectively safe in Munchkinland, as was just demonstrated by the lack of power the witch has, you're not safe in Oz, so you gotta go, you gotta follow the Yellow Brick Road, you gotta get to the Wizard of Oz, and that motherfucker's gonna send you home. She doesn't say it quite like that. I added some spice to the language. But
she did say motherfucker, though.
She does say motherfucker.
Yeah. Go back and watch it if you don't believe
us. I dare you to go back and watch The Wizard of Oz. But yeah, she tells her, like, you got to get back home. And that's the way you're going to get back home.
And then one of the best musical numbers starts to play, which is Follow the Yellow Brick Road. I'm not going to start singing it. I will spare you all that.
We will get a copyright strike.
But then we're off to see the wizard.
The wonderful Wizard of Oz.
And then guess what happens next?
We finally get to see those beautiful plastic stalks of corn.
With just that like harsh fluorescent lighting just glistening down upon this beautiful set, with a scarecrow posted up in, you know, this field as Dorothy is making her way, following the yellow brick road, of course,
right,
towards the wizard, who is in the Emerald City,
mm-hmm,
so that she can get back home to Kansas.
Casey leaned over to me at this point and said, I have a sneaking suspicion this might not be real corn. And I think she might have been onto something.
Casey Anna.
That said, we do meet the scarecrow here. The scarecrow, as we already just said this, but like all of these characters that she meets along the way are like reflections of real people. So this is one of the farmhands.
Mm-hmm.
The scarecrow is my favorite.
Okay, good. Mine too.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
He's great. The scarecrow doesn't have a brain.
No. Nope.
And that's his goal in life, is he wants to have a brain.
He wants to think.
He wants to be able to think.
Yeah.
And I think like, so, okay. So like, you listen, we're talking about a movie that everyone's seen. Kind of think for the most part. So they're all going to have a thing they want, that they want to get from the Wizard of Oz. You know, this is coming. But the scarecrow to me is the character that we really see like, use the thing he's seeking the most effectively throughout the movie. He's constantly coming up with clever plans, coming up with like strategies to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is thinking. And yeah. I kind of think there's like a nice little lesson in that of like, hey man, like you're smart. Like don't be so hard on yourself. I don't know how applicable it is to her other companions, like especially the Tin Man. I don't really think we see a whole lot of like, oh, this guy's got heart. But with the scarecrow, and to a lesser degree with the lion, you do kind of see them like,
that's true,
yeah, like use these things and like grow in these areas that they want. Like he uses his brain often to solve problems. But anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. The scarecrow shows up, he wants a brain, and he sings my favorite song in the whole movie.
Yeah, I was about to say that. If I only had a brain.
It's my favorite song. And his performance is great. I love his physical acting, his dancing, and he's kind of got this loose way of moving. It's wonderful.
At parts during, like, when you're watching this movie, are there parts where you kind of feel like you're watching a stage play?
Oh, yeah.
Because of, like, the set and the, like... I mean, it's a musical, but anyways, I love that.
The sets especially, like the sets have...
And like the costumes even.
Yeah. Well, especially the costumes get a little worse.
Yes. But starting with Scarecrow.
His is fine. It's like not great. We're about to meet the Tin Man. That's the next thing that happens. His is kind of cheaper. And then once we get to the Cowardly Lion, I'm like... He's just a guy, and you can see the zipper and stuff, but it's not nearly
really
as good.
Bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
So Dorothy invites the scarecrow back to, or not back, but on her journey to go see the wizard, because she says, hey, you know, the wizard, supposedly he's a genius. He's going to help me get back home to Kansas. Maybe he can help you get a brain. He says, hey, sounds great. Let's go. They sing that lovely song again. They're off to see the wizard. They are now in an apple orchard where they have a kind of a funny run-in with like an angry apple tree, which I don't know. Oz is a weird, freaky place, I guess.
Yeah, they get accosted by some grumpy trees.
They were super grumpy. Yeah. And but, you know, that's what leads Dorothy to discovering the Tin Man.
Mm-hmm.
Tin Man's completely rusted, like frozen, right? He's totally still. He can't move his arms, his legs, his jaw, so he can't talk. They find out that he's trying to say he needs oil, so they start to oil up his jaw so he can speak. They're oiling his shoulders and his, you know, so he can move.
Right.
And he starts to confess that he has a similar problem to the scarecrow and that he feels like he is missing a vital organ. But in this case, he is missing a heart.
Also, I just want to get ahead of this because, again, I can already hear my film nerd friends' voices in my ears. Yes, this was the second actor to play the Tin Man. Yes, the aluminum powder that they used in the costume for the original actor caused some serious health issues.
Jesus,
and they had
to
hire a different actor to play the Tin Man, Jack Haley. They used aluminum like paste for him instead of the powder. It still caused him health issues, caused him eye infections.
They just fucked up this poor cast.
Yeah, and we haven't got to the worst of it yet. There's some bad shit coming up, but yeah, just need to get ahead of that. Casey Yana sent me the article. I'm reading it out loud. The Tin Man's costume caused all kinds of problems. I also think it's ironic that, as we're talking about one conspiracy or you know, whatever, like morbid tale, this is also the scene that features the infamous hanging Munchkin. They recruit the Tin Man into their ranks. He wants to ask the wizard for a heart. They sprint off into the distance. They skip off into the distance, rather. And as they do so, a bird, a heron, spreads its wings.
Ooh, yeah.
And that is the thing that people always mistake for a Munchkin hanging.
Oh, freaky. And, you know,
we have these like high definition versions of these movies now, so we can see all these little details. That's why the matte paintings don't look as good. And the matte paintings and stuff probably looked better when we were watching them on old film reels, right? But I guess back in the day, that old film reel, it looked like there was a hanging shadow of someone who had hung himself in the background. And listen, some of you are going to be listening to this and you're going to say, no, they replaced that with a bird. That really happened. There was a hanging Munchkin. And like, listen, I'm just going to give you some advice. Let it go with the hanging Munchkin. Let it go. It didn't happen. It's not a great urban legend because it's horrible.
It's
sad. About suicide and no one likes that. But I don't know why this is one of those things that won't like go away. Let it go. It didn't happen.
You know what, kids, if you can believe it, Tyler and I were there for the birth of YouTube. Mm-hmm. YouTube, especially at its conception, was wonderfully ripe with like really fun and epic videos of random different conspiracies, how I'll say it. And I feel like this was one of them where it would, you know, it's like a super grainy ass like video and it's like zooming in. It has the little like red circle circling, like that's the hanging Munchkin or whatever. And you have to like kind of squint to sort of see it. But yeah, we get it. You know, we were there.
I remember going on Snopes.com.
Damn, yeah.
And looking this up.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's
that's awesome.
It's fun to find weird kind of dark conspiracies in the movies you're watching. I hate to be the bearer of bad news on this one. All right, back to our regularly scheduled program. We now have the Tin Man in the party, and we meet our third and final member of the party.
Well, hang on.
Oh, sorry.
Jumping ahead here because we get our next appearance of the Wicked Witch of the West.
She does attack them.
She shows up. She's a right bitch. She's like, right bitch. I'll get you, my pretty, and that little dog, too. And we find out what good of friends that Dorothy's companions are because they say, hey, you know what? We're here for you. We'll help you no matter what.
Yeah, it's true.
Even if the wizard can't help us, we'll help you.
I'm glad you... Thank you for reminding me of that.
I'm sorry. I had to interrupt.
Thank you for reminding me of that.
Then we get... Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Lions and tigers and bears.
Oh my. As a kid, the Cowardly Lion was my least favorite of the three. As an adult, I kind of love him.
Really?
I like his whole like, why yada. Yeah. Like, I like his old timey way of talking. And I kind of like him more than I used to.
Okay, that's fair.
So essentially the Cowardly Lion is they meet him, he's like he pretends like he's tough and he's kind of like scaring them, and then as soon as he gets swatted on the nose by Dorothy, they find out he's a big coward, and very quickly they sort of just have him join the group.
Yep.
It happens all very fast.
But in this case, he's not missing a vital organ, he's just missing a characteristic.
Yeah, he's just not very courageous.
Not courageous.
He's cowardly. So we have our full crew now, our full fellowship.
The gang's all here.
They're getting really close to the Emerald City, and that is when the Wicked Witch decides to cover them in asbestos.
Dude, that's literally what I wrote too.
Yeah, it's dark. It's dark.
She casts a spell to make them fall asleep, essentially, in a field of poppies. But only two of them fall asleep. The other two don't.
Yeah, which isn't really explained.
But we can assume it has to do with one being a scarecrow and the other one being made of tin.
Right. He still rusts up from the... Well, I guess, to be fair, I get now that I'm... Okay, I'm actually going to correct myself because I guess Glinda sends the asbestos.
That's true because she wants to save them.
Yeah, so Wicked Witch puts them to sleep.
Yes.
And then Glinda covers them in
They're
asbestos.
They're saved by asbestos.
And it wakes them up. And
which also that doesn't make sense. Why would snow, because it's supposed to be snow, right?
I think it's supposed to be snow.
Okay, it's supposed to be snow and it's supposed to wake them up from a like magical sleep. Whatever, we're not gonna get too into it, guys. That's not what this podcast is about.
It's a little cringe to watch the scene and see them like rolling around in asbestos.
I know,
and see Toto breathing
horrible.
It in. But again, lots of, you know, dark stuff happened on the set. But they do show up to the Emerald City. And that's where we meet the same actor that played Professor Marvel is playing the man at the door, the guard at the door. And he plays a bunch of characters from this point on. And he's so fun. All of them are kind of different. Like, I keep saying this, but the performances are so good through and through. Everyone is so great. Because you have to think about this. Every character in this movie, every actor in this movie is playing more than one character except for Dorothy.
Correct. And Toto.
And Toto. And they all do such a great job. Like they all, like, they're different, you know, like the farmhands aren't exactly the same as their counterparts, and the wizard isn't. There's similarities, but they're different characters. It's cool. Everyone does such a great job. I forgot to mention also, I love the song that happens after the asbestos exposure. I love the song. It's like, na 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 na. It's quick. They don't sing it. There's like a chorus of people that sing it. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I don't know if I do,
dear listeners, go listen to it. It's one of my favorite songs in the movie. This leads me to my least favorite song in the movie. I do not like the Lion's song.
Oh, it's a snooze fest.
So bad. Although I
Dude,
do love...
it's straight up snooze.
I do love when the Tin Man smashes the flower pot with his hammer, with his axe.
Yes, and puts it on the lion's head as a crown.
That
yes.
part is great.
But, I love that.
Emerald City's neat. It's cool. It's kind of a closed set. You don't really see very much of it, but it's neat. We finally get to meet the Wizard of Oz, who is... terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
And he's a major prick.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's awful. He's super rude to them and treats them all like shit.
He's so rude and scary, like on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awful.
But he tells them, listen, if you guys get me the witch's broom, the Wicked Witch of the West broom, I'll grant all your wishes.
Yep, I'll help you.
I also loved, this made me laugh out loud, and as a kid, it made me laugh out loud, but I love when the lion jumps out the window.
Okay, that part was hilarious because they were like, yeah, we'll do it, we'll go, and he just sprints away from the group and literally dives out the window. Chris goes, okay, so he died? I'm like, no, just
he's fine. So they got it's so funny. So they're sent to go kill the witch. Well, they don't have to kill the witch, but they have to get her broomstick, and they kind of just say that to do that they might have to kill the witch.
Yes. But guess what, convenient as fate might have it, Dorothy and Toto get taken to the witch.
Right.
They don't even have to go find her.
They get kidnapped right out of a not scary farm maze with lawn ornaments that have blinking eyes.
Oh my god, that's so... yeah. Okay, what was with that? So funny.
It's like the cheapest set in the movie.
That's
by
so
far.
Funny.
But yeah, they get kidnapped by the horrifying flying monkeys
are
so fucking scary.
They're so scary. Those scared me like crazy as a kid.
Did you notice, Casey pointed this out to me, I didn't notice it. Did you notice that the scarecrow has a fucking gun?
Okay, yes. Okay, so the Tin Man had a plumbing, like a plumber's wrench, a big pipe wrench.
He already has an axe, so why does he need a wrench?
The lion had something dumb too, like a big bat or hammer.
It was like a spray, like insect spray, like an over-exaggerated.
So they all had like yard tools or household tools, and then the scarecrow has a gun, like a six-shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
The monkeys kidnap Dorothy. They fuck up the scarecrow really bad. I had a trauma moment for me.
Oh, no.
So those of you who are listening to this, some of you already know this about me, but I'm really, one of my biggest like fears, it's like truly a phobia, is I don't like being timed.
I didn't know this.
Okay, so
you don't like being timed.
No, so if you've seen me, I stream on Twitch under the name Dibble is Dead. That's my name on Twitch. I stream Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. If you've seen me stream on Twitch, you know that I'm really afraid of being timed. I don't do
that's
well
so
when I'm
funny.
Timed, and I've always wondered why that is. The scene where the witch is like, the only way to get the ruby slippers off of Dorothy is for her to die, and the way I'm going to kill her is this hourglass running out, and then she'll die. As a kid, Steph, that was the first time I remember being afraid in my life.
Is that
was
the
that
stuff
scene.
Of nightmares?
It's really scary, and Judy Garland's performance during it is really harrowing. She's so scared, and like Toto gets away. And there's this part, oh my God, I'm like emotional. Toto gets away, and there's this part after Toto gets away where Judy Garland just keeps saying, he got away, he got away. She's just so glad her friend made it out okay.
Yeah.
She knows that she's gonna die, and she's just so relieved that Toto, her best friend, made it out. It's so good. It's so powerful. Like, this movie just holds up so nicely.
Yeah, it really does. And so, conveniently located in her prison cell or wherever she's being kept is like a crystal globe that allows her to see her Auntie M.
Right. That's a fucked up scene.
Because all the while she's kind of feeling like Auntie M doesn't care about her or something. Like she's feeling, I don't know.
She's nervous that she's been forgotten.
Yeah. And Auntie M is looking for her, calling for her, wondering where she is. And that kind of gets Dorothy in the feels. Then we cut back to the gang,
mm-hmm.
the three who have been traveling with Dorothy, and mm-hmm. they are determined to save her. But unbeknownst to them, they get snuck up on by these guards.
Well, actually, I think it's implied that they were planning on that.
What?
Yeah, because just before that scene, the Scarecrow says, I have a plan, but you need to help. You're going to be the lead person in it. And then the next thing that happens is they get snuck up on. So I think that the Scarecrow was planning on like pretending to get ambushed and then
so
jumping could, three of them.
That was his plan.
I think so.
Oh my God.
Also, you're leaving out that Toto saves the day because they wouldn't even know where the castle is if Toto hadn't gotten out and helped them.
I forgot. Sorry, Toto.
Sorry, Toto.
Sorry, Lilu.
Sorry.
If you're listening.
Sorry, Dudus. But yeah, so they cleverly get into guard costumes and
yep.
they break into the castle.
Yep.
The Scarecrow has another they save Dorothy. That's the most
yep.
important thing. They save Dorothy. Tin Man comes in handy here. He uses his axe to knock the door down. Scarecrow uses his brain again and drops a chandelier on the guards so that they can get away. And as they're running away, they get cornered. The witch lights the Scarecrow on fire, which is not a very clever plan for the witch because what happens next?
Naturally, Dorothy wants to put out the fire, right? So she dumps some water. She tosses water on the Scarecrow in order to try to save him. And it splashes right on the Wicked Witch of the West. What do you know it? She shares something in common with the aliens and signs. Her weakness is water.
Look at that connection to episode 2 of Pod and the Cob, folks. I didn't even think about that. Stephanie's on it. Yeah, she, poor Dorothy, just accidentally killing things left and right.
Yeah.
But she does kill the Wicked Witch of the West.
And yeah, she melts. Water is her weakness. So luckily that means they get the broomstick, which was their goal to start out mm-hmm. In order to get what they wanted from the wizard. They bring it back to the wizard. One thing leads to another. Ultimately, the wizard does help them, but we find out
he's a fraud. There's the famous man behind the curtain scene. He's just a normal guy from allegedly from our
from
Nebraska,
from Kansas. Oh,
he's from Omaha. His
oh, you're right.
Omaha.
He was from the Omaha.
He's from Nebraska, and he is a fraud. He gives them all kind of loosely gives them what they're looking for. He gives the Scarecrow a diploma, and then the Scarecrow incorrectly cites a mathematic equation
yeah.
out loud. It's wrong, by the way, the equation.
He gets a PhD in doctorate of thinkology. I'm like,
that's great.
Can I get that?
He gives a certificate, like a medal of bravery to the lion.
Yeah.
And then he gives, I always thought this, even as a kid, I thought this was so weird. He gives the Tin Man like a clock
yep.
in the shape of a heart.
Shaped like a heart.
Never really got that one. That one's a little loosey-goosey. The Tin Man is like by far the least developed of the three characters. And then he says, you know what, Dorothy, I want to go back home. You want to go back home. We're going to get in my balloon. I'm going to take you back home. He's a full-blown huckster, but I love that he's a huckster. He puts these three idiots in charge of the Kingdom of Oz.
He totally does.
And he's supposed to fly Dorothy home, but Toto, the rapscallion, sees a cat and accidentally chases the cat. And then the balloon leaves without Dorothy. And all over again, she's stuck in Oz.
What's she gonna do? How will she get home?
What happens?
Well, Glinda appears again and reveals a nifty little hack that she had the key to get home all along. She just didn't know it. And Glinda knew the whole time, but Glinda did not tell Dorothy. She says, you know, your magic slippers will take you home. Click your heels three times and say, there's no place like home.
And after Dorothy does that, she wakes up from what appears to be like a fever dream that she's had. We find out that maybe this all happened. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it was all in her head. She wakes up in bed. And it really doesn't really matter whether or not it happened, because Dorothy has learned like a valuable lesson. And the movie ends on a really great note of like home. Being home is important. What the movie doesn't address is whether or not they're still going to euthanize fucking Toto. But we'll just ignore that.
They're not going to.
I would like to think they don't.
Don't worry. The last line of the movie sums it up really nicely, I think.
Yeah.
Do you want to deliver it?
Go ahead.
Oh, Auntie M, there's no place like home.
Isn't it nice?
So sweet.
So, okay, that's The Wizard of Oz. Let's go into our thoughts on the movie, which we've kind of been open about the whole time.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll just go ahead and say, I fucking love this movie. The last movie we did was Interstellar. That was episode 4. For those of you who haven't listened to it yet, go listen to it. I said at the time that Interstellar was, in my opinion, the best movie we had reviewed yet. And it's immediately trumped by
usurped.
This one. Yeah, Wizard of Oz is the best movie we've reviewed yet. It completely holds up to me. It's forgivable where it doesn't hold up, for the most part. It's my favorite thing we've reviewed. So I just adored it. What about you?
I loved it. I mean, I could jump right into the three things I like about it. I love the music. Mm. The songs are honestly great, and like you said, it does have has an award-winning song in it.
Actually, the entire score won an Oscar.
The entire score. Okay, well then there you go. Yeah. The songs are fun. It's great. I love the set. I think it's cozy. I think it's sweet. I love feeling like I'm at a stage play, but like a really well done, well produced stage play. But it could like also be like your local drama production stage play. Like it's fun. It's accessible. I love Judy Garland. I think Judy Garland is a gem. We haven't really talked a lot about like the mistreatment of Judy Garland. Like her life honestly was a tragedy.
And on the set of this movie.
Yeah. And like being signed with MGM and all that stuff. But she is just like, she really shines like on screen. And I just like, I really love her. So.
Yeah, I'll do three favorite things. I agree with you on a couple of yours. My three favorite things are the performances in general, especially Judy Garland. Everyone is great in this. Everyone's magnetic. You just feel so drawn into every performance. The music, I'll add that as well. The music, like we already said, this movie was nominated for 5 Oscars, but it won 2. Original song and score.
Okay.
So the music is outstanding. And then my third is just that sepia tone color scene.
Okay.
Is just, I just don't know. I really just don't know. I mean, it might. I can't believe I feel weird for even going this far with it and being so extreme. It really might be, to me, the best scene in cinema ever. It's just... The weight of it still being as powerful as it is this later on in life. That scene is so crazy to me. It's so good. So those are my three favorite things. Do you have two or three least favorite things?
I only have two.
Okay. I also only have two.
Yeah. And I kind of like really had to reach to come up with two things that I didn't like. But whatever. One of them being, and you kind of touched on this at the beginning with like the Munchkins and Munchkin Land, like the, in, I felt this way with like the people in Oz and stuff, where they were like slightly unsettling and creepy with their like plastic hair, and they would change, they would like put an effect on voices. So someone would be like, wah, 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 and then someone would be like, burr, 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 and it was like kind of creepy.
Those are really good. You did a good job. I'm impressed.
And then because I had to come up with something else, I really didn't like that like they wanted to kill Toto, or just the neighbor, Miss Filch. What is that?
Gulch.
Name? Gulch. I wrote her name
Filch,
different.
Like, from like Harry Potter.
Is that a Harry Potter character?
His name's Filch.
Anyways, whoever the neighbor lady was,
I never
wanting
knew her name,
to
so I was
kill
glad you knew it all.
Toto is like so heartbreaking.
Yeah. Okay. Mine are a little bit more meta.
Okay, let's hear it.
My two least favorite things were, I was uncomfortable with how often they sort of just tossed Toto around.
Okay.
Like, sure, it's a movie, and how they treat the dog in the universe of the movie is one thing, but they're like shoving him into baskets. They're throwing him around.
Poor guy.
It's like a real dog. I kind of felt sort of weird about how they treated him. And then I don't know. The asbestos scene is just so
yours
hard
are better.
To watch.
Those are more fair.
It's so hard to
that's
watch.
Like actual concern for humanity and life. But yeah,
Wizard of Oz. We don't need to talk about the impact it's had on film. It's obviously a mega hit. It's one of the biggest movies ever made. In fact, the U.S. the U.S. Library of Congress, says that it's the most seen movie in film history. However, although it was critically acclaimed when it came out, nominated for 5 Oscars, won 2, I already said that, it didn't really do very well financially for a long time. It was a $2.7 million budget, and it only made $3 million on its first go around in the theaters.
That's crazy, because we're also talking like 1940s money.
Totally.
Which, like, damn.
Yeah. It was re-released in 1949, and it ended up doing a lot better then. And then audiences were exposed to it to a greater degree in the 50s when it was on television.
Oh, yeah.
So it ended up, you know, obviously we don't need to, like, lament the success of Wizard of Oz. Ended up doing really well. But, yeah, reviews-wise, it might not have been the, like, out-of-the-gates hit we kind of picture. Stephanie and I, we're nonconformists. We don't give a flying fuck what the critics say about a movie. We don't even rate the movies that we watch on Pod on the Cob.
Hell no.
The only thing that you and I rate is, how well was corn utilized in the movie? Stephanie, what is your Cob rating for The Wizard of Oz?
Listen, dear listeners, this is... I don't have a science to this. I have no rhyme nor reason to these ratings. So I just want to throw that out there. My Cob rating for The Wizard of Oz, I'm giving it 3 Cobs. Tyler is giving a completely blown away face. He's rubbing his eyes. I think he might just quit and just leave. Because if I had to guess, he's surprised. Based on especially my rating on the last episode for Interstellar, which I could amend if I, you know, felt strongly enough, but I'm just not going to. I'm just going to let it ride. So Tyler,
as we are recording this episode, dear listeners, as we are recording this episode, Christopher, Stephanie's partner, bought Stephanie and I both these plastic cheapo corn toys for us to always remember our purpose for this podcast. And this corn toy, I'm actually holding it in my hand as we speak, but I'll put it back where it's been the whole episode. It's in the middle of the table. And I would argue that this room has more corn in it than the entirety of The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz squeaks by to being a movie worth being covered on this podcast. There's one scene where plastic corn, not even corn
stalks,
just corn stalks.
Totally.
I gave The Wizard of Oz is my...
You gave it like a 1.
The Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie we've covered yet, and I gave it a 1 out of 5.
Yeah,
on the
I mean, that's
rating.
Fair. Trust me, I don't, you know, like, I agree. I can't help what I do. I just can't help it.
I think one thing that we can agree on based on this episode is that whatever our Cobb rating is for The Wizard of Oz, fantastic movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a wonderful movie. And listen, I know it's rife with controversy. I know that the conditions on the set weren't great. I know that there's all these things we've already made fun of with the asbestos and stuff. If you can, try to view it for what it is, just as a movie. It's really something special. And I think you'll be surprised at like how magical it still feels. I also want to add one little funny thought here. It was nominated for Best Picture. It was nominated for Best Picture and it didn't win. Gone with the Wind won that year instead.
Wait.
Gone with the Wind was directed by the same guy.
Yeah, who quit. Right, sorry, keep going.
No, no, you go ahead.
No,
what did he quit? I don't know what he
was. Was he not directing The Wizard of Oz and then he left it to direct Gone with the Wind?
I don't know.
And then started directing. They had to get a new director?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Look it up. And we'll cut out all of the looking up of it.
Yeah. So The Wizard of Oz was primarily directed by Victor Fleming, who left production to take over Gone with the Wind.
Oh my God, he must have felt so good that he left Wizard of Oz and then his movie
and then won
Best
the
Picture.
Oscar.
Well, either way.
Okay, sorry for that derail.
No, I'm glad you looked that up. All right, listen, thank you all so much for listening. We're 5 episodes in, plus 1 bonus episode. We're loving this. We're not going to stop. We're having a great time. The cadence right now is we're doing 2 episodes a month. One main episode like this one where we cover one movie. And then we're also doing bonus episodes where we talk about other things that we want to talk about, whether it's about like corn or movies or both. So we'll be hitting you with those soon. By the time you're listening to this, the second bonus episode will have already been out. Even though we haven't even recorded it yet.
The magic of technology.
The magic of Hollywood. But thank you all so much for listening. As Steph said at the start of the episode, you can really, really help us out by not only listening, but giving us 5-star reviews wherever you do listen to us, writing reviews, which we will read out loud on the bonus episodes, by the way. You can email us at podonthecob@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram or Blue Sky at podonthecob. If you write us any kind of message or review, I will save it and read it on the air, I promise you. And also, tell your friends, if you like what we're doing, we like doing it. We want to keep doing it. It takes time. It takes a lot of effort and, you know, we want this to be something that we're prioritizing. So like show us that we should keep doing this by just continuing to support us. It really means a lot to us.
Thank you all for listening. This was Pod on the Cob. My name is Stephanie.
And I'm Tyler.
Till next time.
Somewhere over the rainbow. Copyright strike.